Washburn.
The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
I'm Wendy Belling.
And I'm David Hayes.
And we are part of the Cedar Rail Band. And our show, It's All About the Music, is heard Wednesday evenings from 7 till 8 p.m.
The show presents the lives and music of local singer-songwriters, as well as the lives and music of famous musical icons from the 1950s to the present.
So please tune in to It's All About the Music on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you very much again. And, of course, that show is on tonight at 7 o'clock. You want to keep your dials tuned right here for that. Joining me in the studio right now for our weekly installment of ConsiderThis.ca, live in the studio, Rob Washburn is joining me, as well as the Medical Officer of Health for the Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit, Lynn Noseworthy. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Very, very happy to have you. I know you're a busy lady. She's very hard to keep down because she's busy. Busy, busy, busy. And we are talking about the local health unit. We're in your community here for your health. We work to support healthy individuals and families at all ages and stages of life. We work to create healthy public places and spaces throughout our community. Lynn, wow, very happy to have you here. Now, I read the piece, the most recent piece, I guess, from Valerie McDonald. This goes back to February, talking about concerns the health unit might have with regards to the LHINs. But why don't you introduce yourself and let the listeners know a little bit about you.
Thank you very much. My name is Lynn Noseworthy. I'm the Medical Officer of Health for the Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit. I was a general practitioner for 5 years, and during my time as a general practitioner, I saw many patients who had illnesses that were related to either their life circumstance or lifestyle choices. And it reinforced my interest in public health, so I decided to go back to school and study public health. I went to the University of Toronto and finished a fellowship with the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada. I have a specialty in preventive medicine, which is essentially public health. I worked, after I finished my fellowship training, with the North York, City of North York Public Health Department, which no longer exists because it was amalgamated with the City of Toronto.
Right.
I worked there as an Associate Medical Officer of Health for 2 years. I worked with the Hastings and Prince Edward County Health Unit for 13 years mm-hmm. as Medical Officer of Health, and then I joined this health unit in August of 2004. So I've got about 27 years' experience as a public health physician in Ontario.
So can you describe for us what exactly it is that the public health unit does in our community? Because it's not always an institution that we're all familiar with.
Sure. Public health in Ontario is legislated under the Health Protection and Promotion Act. There are 36 health units across the province, and we all follow this particular piece of legislation. There are other pieces of legislation that we also follow as well, such as the Immunization of School Pupils Act, the Smoke-Free Ontario Act, and so on. But there are... The crux of public health are what we call the three P's, health promotion, health protection, and disease prevention. And our programming can be categorized under those three P's. Mm-hmm. Through health promotion, we work to educate and enable people to increase control over and improve their health. And an example of that would be programs and services to help people quit smoking, mm-hmm. prevent injuries, eat healthier foods, or reduce their risk of illness and disease by reducing their alcohol consumption. And we work with a variety of partners to do that. We work with our local municipalities, our school boards, and other agencies to do that. So mm-hmm. an example of that would be some work we did recently through the Safe Communities Northumberland County. Mm-hmm. There was an expo held a few weeks ago, and we work with many partners to try and increase the profile of injury prevention and also help people link up with services that they would need to help them healthy, keep mm-hmm. them healthier. Health protection. Our public health staff protect people's health by inspecting food establishments. We have about 1,400 food establishments throughout our geographic area, monitoring drinking water safety and working to determine the sources of communicable disease. And finally, a great deal of our work is done to prevent disease. So we provide immunization clinics. We also provide the vaccines for healthcare providers to vaccinate their patients and clients. We provide training for food handlers. We work with staff of schools and long-term care facilities to stop the spread of infectious disease. So that's an example of some of our health prevention initiatives.
And usually, isn't it those instances where we see it's the immunization or the spread of disease where suddenly you seem to pop up and in the consciousness of a community, you become really important? There was an instance of this not too long ago. Is that not right?
In the sense of?
The outbreak that we had, or the fear of the outbreak that we had a number of years ago.
Well, first of all, during SARS, that was a big example of the work that public health did in trying to prevent the spread of SARS. And more recently, I met Mr. Glover when we had the influenza pandemic in 2009, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. But it's often said that public health is doing a good job, but no one really realizes we're doing our work. So when we're doing our work correctly, you don't see cases of foodborne disease. You don't see communicable disease outbreaks. There are fewer people smoking and more people being physically active. I remember being at a function and one of my colleagues showed a slide of cases of a certain sort of disease that was prevented by a vaccine, and she called it the disappearogram. Because until the point the vaccine was introduced, there were many cases, and once the vaccine was introduced, the cases just disappeared. So you don't know that we're behind the scenes keeping people healthy.
So every time we go to a restaurant and we know that the food is safe and that we're getting proper healthy food, that's in fact part because of the inspections that are going on in the background to ensure that health standards are being met.
We focus on the work of the population rather than the individual. Mm-hmm. And so we want to keep the entire population healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do things, too, for restaurateurs like hosting
training.
Seminars and training on healthy food handling. Yeah, for a food handler's course and things like that, which I was lucky enough to take when I was operating my business. And again, it's one of those things. I think it is a requirement now, isn't it, in the province to make sure that at least one employee has had the food handler's
course?
That's correct.
So with all these great things that you do in our community, we're looking at some pretty fundamental structural change to how funding is going to take place in the administration of the public health unit. I was wondering if you could put that into context for us and tell us what that's about.
Okay, before you get to that, though, can we let the listeners know who the health unit reports to right now? Because right now you're not reporting to the LHINs, right?
No, we don't. And I thought I'd give a little bit more of a context to what we do. So I mentioned that there's legislation that governs what we do, and that's primarily the Health Protection and Promotion Act. We receive most of our funding from the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. Mm-hmm. We receive some funding from the Ministry of Children and Youth Services. But for our cost-shared budget, which is about $16 million part of our budget, our municipalities pay about 25% of that. In order to receive our funding, we sign accountability agreements with the province. So our funding comes from the province, and we have accountability agreements with the province where to achieve targets for a variety of indicators, as well as we are to implement all the requirements within our Ontario Public Health Standards, which as a standard, it's standard across the province. Mm-hmm. And there are 144 requirements within those programs. With regard to patients first, there was a discussion paper that came out in December last year, and there were a number of recommendations that pertain to public health. One of them was that funding for public health would be flowed via the LHINs, and also the accountability agreements would be through the LHINs. And the Board of Health was very concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being, in other provinces where the healthcare system has been regionalized, public health has ended up losing resources because resources were reallocated to the acute care part of the health system.
Mm-hmm.
And public health, our budgets have been maintained at the 2014 level for the cost-shared part of our budget. And we're finding it a challenge, to be perfectly honest. But we are concerned that if we get our funding through the LHINs, that more of our resources may be reallocated to other parts of the healthcare system.
So just to step back for a second, you mentioned some numbers, but what is your total budget for the area that you cover?
The area that we cover is Haliburton County, mm-hmm. City of Kawartha Lakes, and Northumberland County. Our total budget is about $18 million. About $1 million is our Healthy Babies, Healthy Children program, and that funding comes from the Ministry of Children and Youth Services. The remaining $17 million, about $1 million of that is what we call 100% funded, which comes directly from the province of Ontario, Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. And the remaining $16 million is cost-shared, 25% from our obligated municipalities, which are Northumberland County, the City of Kawartha Lakes, and Haliburton County, and the remaining 75% from the province.
So you're very heavily reliant in your budget in terms of what money's come to allow you to do the jobs that you do, and that comes directly from the province, and you're accountable directly back.
That's correct.
Now, you mentioned in your remarks that there was a document called Patients First. I wonder if you just explain to us what is Patients First and what it was, why it's significant when you start to talk about these changes.
Patients First was a discussion paper released by the province.
All right.
And there were a number of recommendations within the Patients First document, one of which had a series of recommendations pertaining to public health. And so that was the discussion paper that our Board of Health had issue with. And the Board of Health passed some recommendations with regard to Patients First.
Mm-hmm.
Those recommendations were sent on to the Ministry of Health through a consultation process.
Mm-hmm.
As Medical Officer of Health, I went and spoke to our three obligated municipalities to seek their endorsement of the Board of Health recommendations for Patients First. And both Northumberland County and the City of Kawartha Lakes endorsed those recommendations. Haliburton County received it for information, was waiting to hear what AMO, the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, had to say about it, because there is that funding relationship with the municipalities into the health units. Our Board of Health has 9 members. 5 of our Board of Health members come from our local municipalities, and 4 are provincial appointees. And the Board of Health wishes to maintain its independence and to be able to set its budget and determine its programming.
Is that part of your concern, the way the governance model? Because right now it's very much an accountable system whereby you have provincial appointees, but you also have elected officials who have to answer to voters when it comes to issues of public health. How might that change under the system that's being proposed? Is that under threat?
Well, actually, this discussion paper was, as it indicated, was a discussion paper.
Right.
In early June, the province released its proposed Patients First Act. And within the Act, there were a number of recommendations. Again, only one pertained to public health. So at this point in time, there is nothing in the proposed act that would require the funding for public health units and the accountability agreements to go via the LHINs. There's still going to be that Ministry of Health relationship with public health units. So the big thing in the proposed Patients First Act is that there will be a more formal relationship between public health units and local health integration networks.
Could you explain what that means then, just in layman's terms, so that we understand how it might affect us?
Okay. I talked about, I haven't mentioned this part yet, but I did talk about some of the programs and services that we provide. But we also look at things from a population health perspective, because we know that the determinants of health play a major role in why people are not healthy or are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the determinants of health include things like education, social factors, whether or not people have a good job, their income level, whether they have social support networks, and so on. And public health is that interface between the health care system and the rest of the community, so municipalities, school boards, and other communities. And so we're concerned that that the province is expecting the public health units to provide that population health lens to the planning that the local health integration networks are to do. But if they don't give us any additional resources, it means that we have to take internal resources away from what we're doing to address that.
Mm-hmm. And that's really been the concern, right? The fact that you're going to have to move money around and maybe divert it from services that you're providing, which are very crucial to the overall health
of the community. But it does also provide us with an opportunity. With every challenge, there's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It does provide the opportunity to provide that public health or that population health lens to everything that the health care system does. And I keep putting an emphasis on the care side because public health doesn't provide treatment and care,
mm-hmm.
per se. We look at things from a population, so the community is our patient. And if we're able to work with the healthcare, our healthcare partners, that they're able to look at things from a population health perspective. So if, and I'll use tobacco as an example, but we work with our municipalities about tobacco bylaws. The province has a piece of legislation called the Smoke-Free Ontario Act. But within a hospital setting, if someone goes into the hospital with a tobacco-related illness, if the hospital is able to help that person stop smoking, then that person's health will improve, and they probably will not be seeking health care as often as they had before.
Mm-hmm.
Physicians can also play a role in helping their patients stop smoking. And other parties can also help play a role in the bigger policy piece of trying to prevent people from starting to smoke in the first place.
Right.
So that's where public health has a role to play, and the population health lens in the planning of what goes on within the healthcare system would be very beneficial.
So how difficult would it be, though, if the funding, rather coming from its traditional source now, having to deal with the LHINs? Because one of the things you said before we went to air was that, okay, well, that's great, but you'd be reporting to two separate LHINs.
Yes.
And in Toronto, some people would be reporting to five separate LHINs. So rather than having a direct channel for funding through the Ministry of Health, you've now got this extra level of bureaucracy, which is something the province says they wanted to get rid of.
Well, right now the legislation would not have us having our funding received through the LHINs. But you brought up a good point about the number of LHINs and the number of health units. Currently, there are 36 health units across the province, and we're all aligned with municipal boundaries. So I have three municipalities within my obligated municipalities within my area. The City of Toronto has one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I have two local health integration networks within my geographic area, and they cover most of Northumberland County. It covers most of Northumberland County, the Central East LHIN, all of the Haliburton County, all of the City of Cortha Lakes, in addition to Peterborough City and County, all of Durham Region, and part of Toronto. So the types of health issues within that large geographic area are going to be very different depending on where a person lives.
Right.
But wasn't one of the dangers in what you've described, though, that the health system might start to take on some of these public health roles? In other words, if we're talking about smoking, that was the example you gave. If doctors start taking a more proactive role and the hospital starts taking a more proactive role, somebody might come along and say, you know what, we really don't need the health units to do this. So let's take away that funding and let's leave that responsibility with the hospitals and the doctors. And you guys just inspect the restaurants and make sure our water's clean. And, you know, you guys deal with the communicable diseases, et cetera.
Well, we also play a role with regard to inspecting facilities that actually sell tobacco products. We work with our municipalities for the signage that they post for no smoking areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So hospitals would not do that. Physicians would not do that. So there is a role to play. I mean, tobacco is a very big issue with regard to adverse health outcomes.
Well, and same thing with alcohol and other drug awareness, mm-hmm. as well. That's another program that the health unit deals with as well, is drug awareness programs, right?
Mm-hmm. We also work with many community partners around harm reduction. So needle exchange, naloxone distribution, fentanyl patch-for-patch programs. So we are the only entities that would do that from a health perspective. Primary care physicians won't do that. Hospitals won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big role for public health to continue to play in that.
So one of the key concerns, though, of groups like the Ontario Health Coalition and others is that everything goes under the LHIN, and then as we've seen with the hospitals, it becomes a mandate to cut, and to try and find efficiencies and reduce. Now, I know what you've said is what you've seen up till now, that doesn't seem like a direct threat. But in the long term, in the bigger picture, is is there a reason that residents should be concerned about the future of the health unit and its role in the community and its ability to still continue to do its mandate as it is now?
Well, the legislation has not been passed.
Right.
It's proposed legislation. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should avail ourselves of any opportunity to provide input into the legislative process and any other related activities that are going on to support that initiative, because we do want to protect public health programs and services within mm-hmm. our community. We also want to ensure that our people are as healthy as possible. And if we can work with the LHINs, I think it's a good idea to look at things from a population health perspective. We can work with the LHINs to put that lens on the planning that it is doing, then I think in the long run our community will benefit.
Is there a concern, though, from the perspective of health units that you're doing a job so, as you pointed out, I mean, you're doing such a good job that most people aren't even aware of the job that you're doing. Is there a concern, then, from health units like yourself that perhaps because the public isn't aware of what you're doing, that it could be very conceivable for the province to start taking that funding away? Because, again, it's not something that's glaringly obvious. It's not like a pothole, right? It's not like, you know, ambulance services. It's something that happens sort of
behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes. I mean, we are concerned. That's why the board had the recommendations that it had to take forward to the province. And the province listened.
Mm-hmm.
The province took it out of the proposed legislation. So now we need to ensure that it stays out of the legislation mm-hmm. and that the public health programs and services that we have are protected and, in fact, enhanced as much as possible to ensure that, at the end of the day, our communities are as healthy as they can be.
So who should we be directing our concerns to, then? Our local member of provincial parliament, maybe the Minister of Health, even the Premier directly?
Yes, all of them.
All of the above.
All of the above.
Well, if you want to get information, by the way, folks, about the Kawartha Pinerus District Health Unit, you can always call them at 866-888-4577 or go to their website, which is very informative, www.hkpr.on.ca for all the information you need. You can also follow them on Facebook and on Twitter. There's also videos on YouTube. Lynn, I know you're busy. I know you got to get out of here. And I want to thank you for spending some time in here. We hope to be able to get you back in here another time soon so we can talk about a guaranteed income. I know that's something the province is talking about. My guest has been Lynn Noseworthy. She is the Director of Public Health here for the Halliburton-Kawartha Pinerus District Health Unit. Thanks again, Lynn, for being here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of Rob Washburn and myself for our weekly installment of Consider This Live. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to Canada's only holistic political chat.
My cousin Bob and I decided to quit our hustle and bustle jobs in the corporate machine and become entrepreneurs. We are now the proud owners of Curio City. Bob has always had a keen eye for Biblo. With the legal advice of Jim McGrath, we learned the best way to set up our business. Plus, Jim helped us understand our lease. Jim McGrath has been lawyering for over 30 years, so he knows what makes sense in business law. Plus, he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio, is looking for a mature, confident, self-reliant individual to sell radio advertising. This position will be of interest to an individual who would like to employ their people skills by meeting with various members of this region's business community. You'll enjoy meeting and creating long-term working relationships, aiding them in creating their advertising and marketing campaigns. This is a part-time position offering competitive commission package with flexible working hours. We will provide sales training and support to help you succeed in this position. If you're interested, please email resume to info@northumberland897.ca. Attention, Linda LeBlanc.
Listen to Northumberland 89.7 live online at tunein.com/Northumberland897.
Northumberland Security has provided security solutions for over 38 years. From transponder car keys, alarm systems, surveillance systems, and handicapped door operators, they cover Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Northumberland Security prides itself on providing a comprehensive selection of personal and property protection at affordable prices with fast, courteous, and reliable 24-hour service. Located at 22 King Street West, Coburg. Call 905-372-8951 or visit northumberlandsecurity.com, the professional security team.
young teacher, the subject of schoolgirl fantasy. She wants him so badly, knows what she wants to be. Inside her, there's longing. This girl's an open page, bookmarking. She's so close now. This girl is half his age.
And that was the Police with Don't Stand So Close to Me here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Again, big shout out to Lynn Noseworthy for dropping by tonight. Yeah. This audience. We got the best audience on radio. Rob's still here. Rob Washburn, welcome back from the break, Rob.
Thanks very much, Dave. It's good to be back from the break.
So interesting. I mean, the doesn't seem to be a huge concern right now. That I know this is just a policy paper. Something that we discussed before Lynn left was that was this. Do you think just another one of those policy balloons floated out by the province just to see if anyone would get their feathers in a mess? And if it wasn't, then it would be clear sailing.
Well, it's a good theory, Dave. I think you could be right. I mean, maybe they flew the flag and see which way the wind was blowing. But quite frankly, I mean, you and I have talked many, many times about the Lynn and the impact that it's had on the local hospital service. And, you know, when the Lynns first were introduced and when they were first around, everybody was really positive about that. And it was going to be a light touch and, you know, not too much was going to change. And here we are that in the last 5 years, twice we have gone through massive cuts to service in the hospital. And they put a jackboot on the local hospital board to get costs reduced. And it's had a huge impact on our healthcare system here in Northumberland.
And so, it was actually supposed to, I mean, let's remember, the LHINs were brought in to save money, right? That was the goal. Oh, well, we'll bring in the LHINs, we'll put everything under these separate umbrellas, and that they will be responsible, and that the monies that we had been pouring into those services can then be stretched even more because they'll have a more direct control, and they'll be even easier for them to keep their hands out of the cookie jar, as it were, and to make sure that all the money was going where it needs to be. But since day one, what we have seen from the LHIN is simply the usual bean counter thing where they say, oh, well, let's, you know, it sounds like they're running a Walmart. You know, one of the things I learned from a Walmart manager was that they have a mandate every quarter to reduce their costs by 12%. How do you stay in business when that's your mandate? That's your business model.
Well, Dave, I don't know if that's true or not, but I can certainly say that, you know, in terms of the level of a public accountability at the LHIN, the level of representation from the area, I mean, Ms. Noseworthy rightfully stated, I mean, the LHIN for our area is like a huge portion of the city of Toronto, plus these incredibly rural areas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, medium-sized cities like Peterborough also exist. So, it's so hard to imagine how this is problematic, and then to have this system to then control the health units. But as we heard, that's not the case right now. And I think as long as that the money is coming directly from the ministry, that the accountability remains with the ministry, and that system can carry on, then I think something beneficial can come in terms of a greater meshing between the LHINs and the actual patient care versus the preventative, promotional, disease control aspect of it. And the way she was talking about it, you know, you can really see how it could be a beneficial system. And, you know, it's funny. She left with me a sheet here that talks about unhealthy behaviors and socioeconomic barriers contribute to 37% of Ontario healthcare costs. And so, you know, to get that greater integration, we're talking about $4.9 billion in potential savings across Ontario. Yeah. So, I mean, there is an opportunity here if that comes together. What we have to be vigilant of, and I think that's really a critical piece, is that we have to remain in control of what's going on locally. We have to make sure that there is some independence and that the LHINs don't suddenly take over. And once they get control of those purse strings, then, you know, it's time to watch out.
Well, again, that's so very true. And one of the things that the LHIN, or that the local health unit, has been talking about, and I know that LHIN Noseworthy has been an advocate, and as I say, we want to get her back on the show to talk about this, but this notion of a guaranteed minimum income. I mean, we know that it lifts people out of poverty, which is one of the things the province is supposedly committed to, is reducing poverty. But it also reduces the burden on healthcare in so many ways, whether it's mental health care, whether it's physiotherapy, whether it's just bad healthy. Because, of course, one of the things that most people don't realize, and this is something that Canada is wrestling with right now, is we are the largest consumer of salt. And, of course, our foods are laden with preservatives, salt being the biggest one. And if people are living on a fixed income, if they're receiving social assistance or they don't have enough money to buy and make those healthy choices, what we're doing is perpetuating this idea that poor people are sick. Well, poor people are sick because of their diet. Well, they're sick because of their diet because all they can afford to buy are prepackaged preserved foods. They can't afford to buy fresh food. They can't afford to buy fresh meat. They have to buy these products. And unfortunately, you know, and I know the public health unit would be strongly supportive of the fact that we need to get people on a healthier track. Unfortunately, that costs money.
And you know, when we look at the methods and the ways in which the food bank is are used locally, I mean, that speaks directly to what you're talking about, Dave. And I mean, they can only provide what's donated to them. They can't go out and help people make those healthy choices and buy the healthy foods for themselves, the fresh vegetables, you know, so that they can make good food and do exactly what you're saying. So,
well, one of the benefits for our local food facility, though, is they get a lot of fresh produce. There are a number of farmers. Farmer Bob, for instance, whose last name completely escapes me, but Chloe Oliver's father, who actually provided fresh fruits and vegetables to us when we were running the human bean, he actually provides fruit to fruits and vegetables, rather, to the local food bank. So we do have, because of our location and proximity to some local farming, we actually have a bit of a leg up when it comes to being able to provide those types of food sources.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's lots of local gardeners, community gardeners, residents who take their excess vegetables from their own gardens and donate them to the food bank. No, you're absolutely right. But I guess, you know, it's those fundamentals that we talk about. Sure, the system works at a certain level, but bottom line is if people had enough money in their pockets, if they have decent housing, if they can afford good food and be educated about these things, then we have a great opportunity to turn things around.
Healthy bodies, healthy minds, and healthy communities. That's all what the health unit's all about promoting, though, right? That's why prevention is such a key component to the job that they perform. And it's something the province has been talking about. I mean, Kathleen Wynne has said on a number of occasions that she wants to focus on health prevention, illness prevention and healthy by being proactive in providing the services needed. But, you know, it's a great talking point, but it doesn't seem to be much more than that.
Well, and the other thing, too, and this is another big fear, is that the as we were talking about, and you rightfully asked her, we do not see the work of the public health unit in our everyday lives. It's not like, as you were talking about, driving down a road and hitting a pothole and going, hey, that needs to be fixed. I mean, the work that they do is almost invisible. I mean, unless we go into a restaurant and we're sick, or we worry about young people buying smokes at the local convenience store, all those kinds of things. These guys work almost invisibly, making sure that our water is clean to drink, making sure that food is properly prepared, et cetera, et cetera.
Making sure
mothers
the toys
and babies, you know.
Yeah, well, and healthy mothers and healthy babies.
Yep.
Some strong work there with post and prenatal work.
Absolutely.
Helping mothers, as Steve Martin says, did a lot of work with unwed mothers, just helping them get their start. But the reality is, you know, as you say, it is sort of an invisible service that people have just sort of blindly refuse to acknowledge, perhaps. And maybe it's because, as she says, they do such a good job.
Yep.
I mean, if they were dropping the ball, I mean, right now down in the United States, there's issues at various states, especially in southern states, where they're dealing with the Zika virus.
Yes.
It's a very huge issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get legislators who do things like tack on raises to pieces of legislation with regards to funding. And it's insane. But we don't have that here. You know, we have a committed army, if you will, of public health officers, which Lynn is one of them, 36 across the province, health units across the province of Ontario. And their mandate is to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. Their mandate is to make sure that people are immunized. Their spread is to disseminate information and education.
Yeah.
That's the role of the health unit. And again, it keeps the community healthy.
Absolutely.
As she said, the community is her patient.
Yeah, amazing.
I thought that was a great line. We're going to take our first break, our next break of the hour, rather, when we come back, more of our conversation with Rob Washburn and I. You are listening to Northumberland's only holistic political chat. This is The Drive Time. This is Consider This.
Beat the rush. Get ready for the hot summer. Install a new air conditioner from Pritchard's Climate Care, starting as low as $2,900. Rebates available on qualifying equipment. At Pritchard's Climate Care, we care about your comfort because we're your neighbors. Give us a call at 905-885-8216. That's 905-885-8216. Free estimates are available. Offer expires June 30th.
The music you like is the music we play. Listen to Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. My guest in studio is Rob Washburn for our weekly installment of consider this.ca. Rob, you wanted to start us off.
I did. Dave, I don't know if you've been following the news, but in the last little bit, there's been a major turnaround with the funding to autism. And I know you did that amazing interview not too long ago. What are you making of these changes?
Well, I'm happy to note that this has, in fact, the government has made a complete backtrack on this controversial autism funding. And I'm looking at a photo here of Michael Couture, the Minister of Children and Youth Services, at the announcement on Tuesday morning, which was yesterday. This was just announced yesterday, by the way, folks. And Kristen Ellison is right there in the front row. And she, of course, was in studio with us talking about this. The Ontario government has backed away from a controversial age limit it imposed earlier this year on funding for intensive therapy for children with autism and introduced a new program for therapy funding in the province. The Minister of Children and Youth Services, Michael Coteau, made the announcement shortly after 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time yesterday. In March, the province announced $333 million in funding for autism programs over 5 years, but they also eliminated government-funded intensive therapy for children aged 5 and older. The move was widely criticized by affected families and advocates, and the ministry said in a media release Tuesday that it has listened closely to experts, stakeholders, service providers, and families since then. The government's new autism plan adds another $200 million over 4 years to speed up program delivery and provide $1,000 per week for therapy for children 5 years old and up while they're on the waiting list. And the transition to the new program will begin in June of 2017 instead of 2018, the ministry says. The new program will provide all children, regardless of age, with more flexible services at a level of intensity that meets each child's individual needs, significantly reduce wait times for service, and increase the number of treatment spaces available to serve more children and accommodate the rising prevalence of autism diagnoses. That according to the province. Now, additional supports announced on Tuesday include, but are not limited to, a choice of direct funding or immediate and continuous access to applied behavior analysis or ABA services, and supports for children 5 and older who were on the intensive behavioral intervention, the IBI waitlist, to provide access to continuous service until children are able to enter the new program next year. They're also going to strengthen autism supports in school to help children and children transition to and continue in full-time school, increase access to diagnostic assessments to allow for earlier diagnoses and treatment, some of the concern that was raised by Ms. Ellison, and also greater access to information and direct support for families to help them transition to the new program. Ottawa resident Heather Boudrant's son Jacob was nearly a month away from turning 5 when the March announcement to cut the funding was made. She said, and I quote, "I think it was a real shock to some people because they put all their hope in their children being in this program. For families, it was a huge blow for their children, upbringing, and the ability to participate in society." Ms. Boudrant said families with less financial resources were hit even harder than her own because intensive therapy costs thousands of dollars every month. 2 months of therapy for Jacob, her son, from May 1st to June 30th, cost $11,500. So for families on any type of assistance or underemployed, this is virtually out of their price point. The cutoff sparked months of protests, letter-writing campaigns and social media advocacy for parents as well as advocates, including Bruce McIntosh. He's the president of Ontario's Autism Coalition. He said, "We had parents from Windsor to Ottawa, and we had them from Sudbury to Niagara. You name a town or city, and they were there," McIntosh said. McIntosh had seen the ministry's announcement before Tuesday morning and said he was excited about what it means for the province. "It is a complete sea change from the autism program from what was announced in March and what was going on beforehand," McIntosh said. "They've stepped forward in a major way, and it's going to meet the needs of every kid touched by autism in Ontario. Whether they've been on the wait list, whether they've been in the intensive behavioral intervention program, it's going to take care of all of them." Now, the Ministry of Children and Youth Services said yesterday at the announcement that it was the result of work with advocacy groups such as the Ontario Autism Coalition, families, and therapists. Premier Kathleen Wynne has signaled her government might change its position on the autism policy and recently replaced the minister responsible for the change, Tracy McCharles, with Mr. Coteau. And what parents are looking for more than anything is a clear statement that if their kid is over 5 years of age and has a severe diagnosis, that they're not going to get thrown under the bus. And that will get an intensive intervention. That according to Ann Janovic, and she speaks for the Alliance Against the Ontario Autism Program. So a lot of stuff, very excited families out there, a lot of parents very happy.
So she was the woman that was putting up the posters with Lou Rinaldi's face on them. Is that correct? Do I remember that right?
The woman just mentioned a moment ago, yes. What happened was it started out down in Niagara.
Oh, yeah.
Because one of the constituents down there had gone to tried to get a hold of their member of provincial parliament.
Oh, yeah.
He was a no-show. They were looking for him, that's why she put up the wanted posters.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was, so she initiated the process in Niagara.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other family members of the Autism Coalition and other family groups said, you know what, that's a great program.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'll do is we'll do the same thing with our MPP.
Mm-hmm.
So when we saw the posters going up around here in Northumberland, mm-hmm. it wasn't directed specifically at Lou Rinaldi. And although I know that Lou was really upset about it, and rightly so, I would think. But by the same token, he is the face of his government in this riding, right?
Absolutely. And these changes, I'm sure that kind of pressure was part of the reason that they've made this about decision. Face. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was trying to think of a nice way to say it, but no, you're right. About face is right. Which it's good to see. I mean, it's good that they're listening. And you know, this is two examples we've had in one show, Dave, where we've heard the government, backing away from positions that are not popular and actually listening to what people have to say.
Well, and that I got to say this right here, listeners, and maybe people are going to go, you're a shell. But the reality is I remember in Ontario under the Bill Davis government, this type of activism got results.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how separate school funding came about in Ontario, mm-hmm. pretty much through these type of activism. But then we had subsequent governments thereafter that just were not listening to people.
Yep.
And the same thing in Ottawa. And now it's almost refreshing to know that we have, at least it appears that we have, a government in Ottawa that's willing to listen to people. And now we have a premier in the province of Ontario. Not that the previous premier wasn't listening. I don't think he was listening with both ears. This premier now, and for all the heat she gets, I really think she should be applauded for this decision. Because, you know what? It was a tough choice. They have to find the money from somewhere. We don't know where that money is going to come from,
yep.
but these people are going to continue to get their funding. The question I have is, what is the government and what are the local health units doing to try and figure out why there has been such a huge increase in the number of children suffering from autism? That's a question I don't think we're going to get an answer to immediately. We're going to take our next break. When we come back, more of our discussion. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to consider-this.ca, part of the Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat.
Do you want to know more about many of the programs and services available right here in Northumberland County? Then join me, Jamie Simmons, Tuesday from 11 to 12 on 89.7 Truly Local Radio for In Our Own Backyard. Take a journey behind the scenes of the many local agencies as I speak with the caring and giving people that make Northumberland County such a great place to call home. That's In Our Own Backyard, Tuesdays from 11 to 12 on 89.7 Truly Local Radio.
Come on out to Hometown Bingo and celebrate Father's Day on June 19th. At every session, all male players will receive a ballot for a chance to win one of two $25 in Hometown Bingo Bucks. Don't forget our Customer Appreciation Bingo on Thursday, June 30th at 10:30. Regular games are $20 and $30 in Hometown Bingo Bucks. Jackpot full card, receive $100 in cash and $100 in Hometown Bingo Bucks. There's a free lunch with beverage and dessert. We are located at 884 Division Street. Call us at 905-372-5426 or visit us at hometownbingo.ca. Our license number is 7884.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7.
Northumberland89.7.ca.
And welcome back to the Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. With me in studio, Rob Washburn. And we've been talking about this. I think it was the right-minded decision by the province to it took them some time, but they made the right choice.
And the pressure was coming down, and good for the parents for not giving up and for coming together and placing the pressure on local politicians.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that found its way back into the caucus, and certainly it's good to see, as you were saying earlier, that they're listening because I can't imagine. I know when you interviewed Christine Elston, you didn't talk a lot about what it's like to raise a child that faces those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't imagine, as a parent, I can't imagine what the life must be like and the resources, not only financial resources, but the emotional and how taxing it must be. So to have these kinds of services and to feel that, you know, your child can move forward and be successful. I got to tell you a personal story, if I can, very quickly. I had a young man who was autistic in our journalism program. And I took him under my wing and worked with his parents, and we were getting him through the program. And it just turned out that journalism really wasn't for him. But he did have a gift for computers and animation. So he transferred into the animation program. And just this last convocation, I watched him walk across the stage with his diploma. And he's now using those skills. And for him to have achieved that is absolutely monumental. And, mm-hmm. you know, he had amazing parents. I had worked with his mom. We have amazing accessibility services at the college that supported him. But to see that level of achievement, like, every child should have that opportunity, you know?
Well, and that's the mandate of public education in this province, that every child should have the opportunity, the same opportunity, no matter what your demographic is.
And those types of services that we were just talking about and those types of programs are the things that help facilitate that. So good for them.
And again, I want to send a big shout out to Kristen Ellison as well for being a strong advocate here. And, you know, she actually told me that, you know, she had voted for Lou, and this was something that was going to affect her vote next time around, perhaps. And it does beg the question, I wonder how many people were feeling that way, feeling as though the provincial government had let them down, and that this was definitely going to sway the way that they were going to, whether or not they would support the government the next time around.
Well, in a larger context, I mean, we see what's going down south in American politics, and we saw what happened in Britain with the recent vote, and a lot of things, a lot of the attribution to these people and to these situations goes back to people feeling disenfranchised, that mm-hmm. the governments aren't listening, and that people feel a need to take back control so that people in public office are listening. So, I mean, it's good to know that it still works. The system still works from time to
time.
That's
right. It's not completely broken, that's for sure. Well, I want to thank you for being here again, Rob.
Thanks, Dave.
I hope you have a great weekend. And for those of you that are going down to the Waterfront Festival, make sure you dress appropriately, bring your sun protection and all of that, bring a hat, and enjoy yourself at Canada's largest waterfront festival. If not, it's the best anyway, as far as I'm concerned. You've been listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. Here are Bachman Turner Overdrive, taking care of business, taking us to the top of the hour. Stick around for Cedar Rail.